You guys made me chuckle. No, let me tell you a quick story. It wasn't Brian Cox.
So you had this this young Hollywood writer named Nick Castle, and he was living through the 80s, and all of a sudden this movie came out. He went to the theater, and he saw this movie, and he walked out, and he said, I can do way better than that. I can write a movie. And so he sat down, he started writing this movie called Hook. And when they first interviewed him, they said, why did you come up with the Peter Pan story? And he said, because I saw Point Break and I figured that my shittiest writing could still be better than this.
All right. Just flip that around. Do you know who Nick Castle is?
Literally, I just pulled up IMDb. It's just the first writer that I could see his name on.
Well, this is going to tickle like a little butt here, right here.
Oh, shit, no.
He is actually Michael Myers,
I just saw that
in Halloween. So there you go, dude.
Brandon hoisted by his own petard.
Yeah, one of our best episodes and movies we've ever recorded.
And with that, welcome to another episode of season 4 of Three and a Half Gentlemen, the podcast where three of the four hosts provide a refined and intellectual analysis of movies for our private collections, and one of us tries desperately to keep up. We'll let you decide which host is which, but for now, my name is Sean, and with me, as always, are my co-lost boys, Jeremiah.
Tick, 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 yo.
Eddie.
Hello!
And Brandon. Growing.
Rufio. 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 Come on, everybody. Well, help me out.
Rufio.
Oh. We all grew up saying that, didn't we? We all grew up saying that.
Looky, looky, I got hooky.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah. Well, guys, with season 4, we're picking movies that we think that will be fun to talk about, like this one. Some of these will be from our private collections, while others might be new releases in theaters and streaming. Additionally, throughout the season, we'll be talking about a TV show or two.
As with every review we give, our goal is to answer one simple question. How many drinks does it take to get through the film that we just watched? At the end of the podcast, we'll rate the movie based on a scale of 0 to 5, 0 being a perfect film that you could watch stone cold sober, and 5 being sort of the film that makes you want to get locked in the boo box and be tortured with scorpions. That was fucking scary, by the way.
I love
didn't that scare you when you were little? Shit?
There was couple of scenes. Yeah. A couple scenes though that, like, even today, I was like, "Ooh, I, like, this is a little bit behind, like, not a kid's movie."
Little bit behind.
All right, with that, what movie do we have flying its way into our hearts and our podcast this evening?
Well, tonight we have the Steven Spielberg family classic, 1991's Hook. Hook tells the story of a now grown up Peter Pan who doesn't remember his previous life as the tights wearing pirate battling boy who never ages. When his son and daughter are kidnapped by the notorious Captain Hook, Peter must make his way back to Neverland and become the Pan he always was to save his children. This movie stars Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman, Julia Roberts, and the always perfect, and I do mean perfect, Maggie Smith, who's only 56 or 57, and she still looked like she was 144.
Yeah, she still looks like she's in Downton Abbey, man.
She hasn't aged at all. Oh, my God. Anyway, Hook has an IMDb rating of 6.8
like
out of 10.
Like a fine wine.
She is. She's a Chianti. And so listen, I want to just say this. I want to highlight this because here. I was baffled. Okay, so it's a 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb and a critic score of 29% and an audience score of 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I do think as of now is one of, if not the lowest rated films that we've tackled. And I know we're jumping ahead, but what the fuck? 29%?
Because all the kids grew
critics
up.
Critics are idiots.
I'm going to go ahead and give you
one of
all the kids grew up and became adults.
Well, so what was the previous lowest score? Was it Vanilla Sky? So
I think it would have to be Vanilla Sky. Well, but Vanilla Sky is still in the 40s. This is 29.
Yeah. Vanilla Sky. As with every movie that we review, we try to pair with a cocktail that we hope will enhance the viewing experience. So, Ed, please shake us down with that cocktail.
Yes. Yes, I will. This is a old-time favorite for all of us. I'm happy that we picked this one. Really easy. Tonight, in honor of the title of character, we're celebrating the pirate life with a classic Captain Coke. Get a glass with ice and fill it with some Coke or a Diet Coke or some Coke Zero, and then add some Captain Morgan spice rum. What is that?
Just don't do Pepsi. No.
Yeah, don't do Pepsi. Add some Captain and Coke, pretty much. And you know, you want the lime, mm-hmm. you can do the lime, but don't forget to do the whole stance too. You guys do the stance.
You gotta put one leg up on the barrel. That's mm-hmm. what it is. It's one on the barrel.
Well, you could also do the Peter Pan. Talking about both the hands on
with
the hips.
The both the hands on the hips, and then you're looking off into the distance. You know,
which
and
he I didn't realize how many so times much, he actually did that in the movie.
So let's ignore the critics' reviews and dive into what is a childhood staple for me, at least. This was one of the movies I had on. I remember having it on VHS. In that, remember that white plastic protector case, like the one that you could throw across the room and it'd be fucking fine. I had this movie, and I remember watching it and being so terrified at the beginning of the movie when the hook was dragged across the wallpaper in the house. And you're in this beautiful house, right? This old Victorian London house. And I love old houses, I love old things. And you see this fucking hook just scraped across the wallpaper.
No, Sean.
I sure as a kid just getting freaked out.
It's the hook that the latch.
On the
latch. That one.
That
was like a poltergeist moment.
We don't really get to see
there was hooks all over the fucking house.
Yeah.
You just see there was a hook dragged through the walls and shit, you know? But
I didn't mean it. I meant like the aftermath of it. That was the one that that freaked me out like a lot.
I agree.
Can I ask you guys something? Why is this movie called Hook?
Because it's about Captain Hook.
I think it's not because really. Hook is the instigating. Hook is the instigating character.
It's about,
right?
It's about Hook.
Without him doing what Hook. He does, none of this shit happens. And what I think is interesting, and this is something I wanted to talk about.
This movie. Go ahead.
Brady. Oh no. Okay. So
I got beef with Jeremy when he says it's not. No,
Hook's
story.
Listen. The critics can be wrong, and Jeremy can be wrong, and this is an example of both. But here's what we got. What
should we call
fire.
Pan?
Friendly fire.
No, we don't want Pan. Listen, here's something I think is really, really interesting. And this is something I caught the last couple of days when I was watching this. And that is the fact that Hook is in so desperate need of Peter Pan. And I think that it's really interesting. He's having this existential crisis. Yep. And I think that, you know, we can kind of slough it off and laugh it off. But the scene where he's threatening suicide, right? He's got the gun up to his head and he's saying, "Don't stop me, Smee. Don't stop me, and then stop me." Like we look at that and we kind of laugh about it. I remember as a kid, I kind of like, "Oh, that was funny because he's saying, 'Don't stop me, but stop me.'" Ha ha ha. But if we look at it,
stop me.
He needs that equalizer, right? He needs Peter Pan. It's just fascinating, right? He can't give up at the end. In a lot of ways, this is a character study of somebody who desperately needs somebody to balance him out. It reminds me so much, and this, you guys might laugh about this, but of Unbreakable with Mr. Glass, with Samuel L. Jackson's character. He needs that opposite to know who he is. Without Peter Pan, Captain Hook isn't Captain Hook. And I think it's a fascinating thing to throw in with a kid. Yeah, it is. It's a fascinating thing to throw in with a kid's movie. Or a family movie, I guess.
The premise of the movie, I mean, the whole basic premise of the movie is exactly as Brandon states, but I'll make it more clear. Hook travels to real world to steal Peter Pan's kids, to draw Peter Pan into Neverland so that he can once again have the thrill of the adversary of Peter Pan in Neverland. That's the whole premise of the movie.
And the fascinating, he would never kill Peter Pan because he can't kill Peter Pan. You said it, it's just like the Joker and Batman. They need each other.
It needs to go
on
forever. They need the play.
Yeah.
And this is what I think was so fucking – this is why, by the way, it has a low audience score, low credit score, one of the two, is because this is a movie that's completely misunderstood by, I think, the grand audience. I think parents were thinking it was a kids movie. It's Spielberg. It's Robin Williams. It's got no seriousness to it. This is the most serious movie that Robin Williams probably did other than the major dramas that he did.
Right.
Because it is a man who has lost. He has lost his sense of spirit. He's lost his sense of self. He's lost his sense of everything that makes him a human being. And he's able to plunge back into a world that he knew as a child and regain a portion of that innocence. Mm-hmm. And with that recognition of innocence, he reconnects with his children. Like this is every kid's dream, is that the hardworking parent of the 1990s with briefcase and cell phone in hand who came down after a hard day's work would completely change their personality and play with them and engage engage in their make-believe world when they got home. That was something that all 90s kids dreamt of.
But why do you think Spielberg feels like this is like his least favorite movie? I mean, he said it on record, like, dude, I don't want to be even like associated with this, pretty much with this movie. He feels like it's a failure for his
I'm going to take that one. And Sean, I what you said is absolutely right. I think that the tone is great. And like you said, it's misunderstood. And I think if I'm just going to go out on a limb, my guess is that Spielberg's beef with this movie is my beef with it. And it's not enough to go 29%. That's for damn sure. I mean, my score isn't going to be low or high or however we want to say it. But what the problem is with this movie is that it's inconsistent, in my opinion. And I think we can explore this throughout, you know, our talk here. But it's a movie that doesn't quite know what it wants to be. Does it want to be a serious character study of Captain Hook? Does it want to be a character study of like Sean was saying, you know, a man who's lost his way and is finding his way back? Or does it want to be kind of a silly, you know, fun movie for families to go and laugh at? And I feel that this movie is really inconsistent in its tone. It doesn't quite know the type of movie it wants to be. And I think that Spielberg might look back on it and say, I wish I had had a little bit clearer delineation of what it is. And there are some scenes that bother me. And like, and I mean, who was it? Yeah, Jeremy, just real quick, Jeremy, I think it was you, or maybe Ed, it was you, sent me one of the GIF of, you know, the bigger guy who rolls down, the bowling ball thing at the end.
Yeah. Right?
To me, that was something I laughed at as a kid, as an adult. And I go, what the, like, why? Why would we go there? That was dumb. It was silly, right? It gets the laugh from the kids. My kids were watching it. They both laughed. It's silly, it's dumb, and it doesn't fit into the really serious, nice, beautiful vibe of the movie. And so my thought is he's just upset because it's inconsistent.
That's what you get, I think, with a young Spielberg. I think like he was toying around with so many different ideas here. I think he grew after this movie. Definitely, I agree with everyone with what they're saying. I feel like though, this movie, he didn't know it was going to be a classic until years later. Like, this is the best Peter Pan movie and Hook movie out there. I feel like personally, I don't think there's anything that
Finding Neverland
this movie. I just don't see it the same. This one,
oh, that's
there's
different.
Like spots here and there, but overall, I really see it hit. Like, I just saw it differently now. I think as picking apart the movie with like the I think it was that same character, Brandon. I forgot his name, but when he was talking about, like, do you remember your mom? Yeah. When he was talking to Peter, and like it was like some of these deep moments, and all of a sudden it goes back to a funny moment, and it's just like, whoa! Like as a kid, you don't realize what these deep moments are. So it's like he's trying to hit to both children and adults here all the time. The whole time there's like a children adult like scene it's nonstop. It's a little bit too much after a while. But like I felt it hit hard. I realized this is the last boys. They're all orphans,
it's
right?
Sad. Yeah,
it almost makes me think.
And then they lost Wendy.
Yeah, it makes me think like
so. This, not only were they lost boys and orphans, but then they lost Wendy, who was their own mom. So go ahead, Jeremiah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. It's totally fine, man. I actually think this was Spielberg's crossroad from the 90s to from the 80s to the 90s. I was reading about this article about he always felt guilt in this film because he felt like he checking out because he wanted to do a musical. And by the first week after the shoot, he just kind of just scrapped all that and decided to just to go for this, the regular film. And I think there was always kind of like a sense of guilt of not knowing what he wanted to do. And I think this was the movie for him to really get to that next level as a director, because 2 years later, you know, he does Jurassic Park and Schindler's List. And I think this is something where he was able to try and find that balance of what he's going to do going forward, which I think this movie has a very importance about his career and like the second career that he had during the 90s and to the 2000s.
It's really
true. I'm going to say something a little controversial. I think the fact that he doesn't like the movie is indicative of how great a director he really is. He doesn't like this movie, I think, for the same reason he changed E.T. and got rid of the guns from E.T. because he does not like when he paired serious life-threatening situations with children. That's something that historically in his career he has not liked, and he's gone back in his career and wanted to change those moments. And the fact that Rufio dies at the hands of Hook, spoiler alert, sorry. I just should have said that. God.
Also the last words of Rufio.
But it's not just Hook as a character, I think, that would have done anything to keep Peter Pan in there, even kill his children. And I think that came through in Dustin Hoffman's performance. And I think that's something that Spielberg would never have done today. He would never have put these innocent children at the hands of adults. But I could see him wrestling over that suicide scene with this is a kid's movie, and he's got a character contemplating suicide. He's got people put in a boo box with scorpions in them. He kills one of his chief characters. This is a very dark departure from Spielberg's norm.
It is.
So I can see why he doesn't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, Rufio's death, man, I'm just going to say, you know, watching it now, it's like, oh, that kind of came out of left field. I didn't expect that, you know, because there's so many times where, you know, he could have died or someone could have died. And all of a sudden you kill in the last 15 minutes, but then you forget about it, you know, in the last 15 minutes.
It's so true. But I think that's one of the, at least for me, you know, and I think that we all kind of, you know, we're all relatively the same age. And so we all came up through life. And you know, this movie hit us at about the same time. And that was one of the first devastating deaths that I ever remember seeing on screen, right? That was one of the first times that a character died.
Yeah.
And I will go through my life remembering Rufio's death as being one of the most like hard-hitting, affecting deaths that I ever saw in movies, because it was really one of the first times. And you're right, it kind of comes out of nowhere.
But look at also, dude, I mean, we're jumping all around, but at that point when Rufio dies – Robin Williams as a character realizes that this is not fun and games.
Yeah.
This is fucking real. Nope. And it's almost like he goes, nobody else is fighting. It's me and Hook. Like, you guys can all, everyone just kind of like, it changes the whole dynamic of the movie, of the, everyone's playing around doing the roll ball, you know, dropping shit everywhere. And really it's true. Like, oh shit. This is really serious. This is real.
You just killed a kid. Yeah, you just killed a kid. And all of a sudden, you even had the idea that even Hook realized, oh, I just woken up Peter Pan. Like, Peter Pan's pissed off, and this is a whole different person now fighting me. You see, I wonder how long Hook has been there, because you can tell he's lost his mind so much, right? He's lost. He's the one that's lost the marbles, right? And like all the way down to the clocks,
they've been there 50 years. They've been there 50 years, Ed.
Yeah. An alligator. And I'm wondering, like,
crocodile.
He lost his arm in the original Battle of Peter Pan. Crocodile. Yeah. Alligator, crocodile.
You killed Sean on that one.
I think Dustin Hoffman's performance is truly amazing as Captain Hook. Like, it made you, like, he was very scary to when I was a child watching this movie, you know, and then how he was manipulating the son. I saw how quickly he was able to that was creepy. And then the daughter was just like, don't believe him, Jack. Don't believe him. You know, run home, Jack. You know, you're a bad man. It's interesting how she never caught onto it, but the boy did. Just he saw that there was a weakness in the boy, that the boy
wanted
his dad. Spielberg right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Spielberg had his touch on that right there because of his own experience.
I also think that was the age that boys – I mean, prior to – what is Jack? 11, 12?
Yeah, something like that.
About right there? That's the age that kind of boys start becoming a teenager, right? Adult. They start understanding adult themes. And so he was introduced to the concept of his dad never being home. And Captain Hook was always going to be there. Captain Hook gave him baseball. Captain Hook gave him cookies. It was like – it was almost like this concept of like – and I hate to put this in there because I feel like Steven Spielberg would slap us across the face. But it's almost like Captain Hook was a stepdad.
Yeah.
And trying to lure and woo the children into his way of life.
Yeah.
Say, oh, forget the dad. The dad's a piece of shit. The dad never shows up for anything. I'll be your dad.
Yeah.
And that's just I'm not disparaging just clearly I'm not disparaging fathers who come in and you know take over children or co-parent with children. That's a wonderful thing. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that in this situation you get kind of a negative vibe from it.
But you get one of the best scenes, and it kind of flies under the radar in a lot of ways, is the clock smashing scene, right? I mean, not only is that metaphorical for the fact that he's breaking the watch that his or you know the I guess the watch that his dad gave him, but more than anything, he's allowing him to take this anger out, right? Where you've got this idea that for kids, we want to contain anger. You know, if a kid gets angry, we go and we calm them down. And you've got Hook offering the opposite. And I think that, yeah, we can look into this. There's a whole bunch of like Freudian psychological, psychoanalytic shit that we can talk about with this. But in a lot of ways, it is Hook that allows Jack the sense of comfort with being who he is without any kind of apologies. And that's something that Peter Banning, right, his dad, couldn't give him or didn't give him. So I think it goes beyond just this affection. It's this also the support that Hook gave him. And what I think is interesting, and actually something that Amanda caught that I didn't, is the fact that so at the end, and I know we're jumping all over, but at the end when Jack and Maggie fly through the door, right, and Tink brings the kids home, and the mom's sleeping in the chair, and Jack says something like, "I remember her." It's only been what, 2 days, 3 days in their world, and maybe a night time in the real world. But he's been, this is another word that I think that we could probably argue against, but he's been brainwashed to the point where he's forgotten parts of who he actually is. And I think that's a really interesting
thing. Let's use the word enchanted.
Yes, enchanted.
Well, it was also to his dad, also to Peter. He had no idea who's that man.
I like the idea what you guys are talking about, that Cook needed Pan for just existence. Like, you know, like the whole Dark Knight thing. You're my only happiness of like, you know, my everyday life. Because I was wrestling during this fucking movie. I was just like, nothing's adding up to me right here, okay? Why didn't Hook have him kill right there and then, you know, instead of letting him go for 3 days, you know, and everything like that? Like, to me, I was just trying to figure out what's the purpose? What's the purpose of actually taking the kids and not killing him then, you know? And I was just trying to figure out, like, the story and the script, but then realized, like, without Pan, there's no existence in this life.
There's no Hook.
There's no Neverland.
No yeah.
There's
yeah.
no Neverland. Yeah.
And so I got it now. Thank you.
And I would say that Neverland represents innocence and imagination, right? So that's, and how often have we talked about this concept of adults losing their sense of innocence and getting so swept up in the real world that they've lost themselves, right? So to think about this, Hook. And I know that this is controversial. Hook could be seen as somewhat of a hero in trying to hold on or trying to regain that innocence in the world. Now, he did it in a shitty way. He stole children and tried to get Peter Pan back. But all he's trying to do as a character, as a person, is keep that world alive. Keep the combativeness alive. And it's this magical world of Neverland. And, you know, it's always the wind always blows and the sail always catches. And for me, Dustin Hoffman plays this character on the brink of sanity and insanity so beautifully that you actually believe that he's in control of this world. When he is not, he is not in control of the world at all. He is in control of his crew, barely. They're barely hanging on.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Neverland. And I always, you know, us being young, like Neverland's the best place, you know, because we can find our innocence. But when you think about Neverland, it's a lost place. It's a place that you stop living when you think about it.
Yeah.
You don't get to learn from your trials and errors. You don't grow. You don't feel. You don't learn how to be a better person. Yeah. So it's almost like you're being stuck in this like this limbo of a purgatory type
time
of
loop.
Shit, you know? Yeah, exactly. And so to me, it's just like when I see the kids, which is sad when Peter like leaves, you know, leaves the kids, you're just like, oh, you're just leaving the kids by themselves. Like they don't have anyone to go to now. You know, it's the saddest thing. That you know, these kids are getting left behind and shit, dude. I mean, that makes sense with
again,
Hook,
yeah, that's the thing.
It makes sense with Hook, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I believe that Peter is also lost, but I almost want to say, I mean, Julia Roberts. I mean, she played a great character, but you're saying Hook takes the kids. I also want to say, is it Tinkerbell that takes the kids? Does she kidnap these orphans and brings them there, and they could live in Neverland because there is no parent? So it's this weird that these parents, these kids don't remember their moms or dads, but it's not just because of Hook, it's because of Tink. So like, it's just this, it's a place that you're allowed to grow for imagination, but you do have to grow up sooner or later. But it's something that you let your kids, you should be able to go back to Neverland and be with your kids and be in the moment with them.
That would have been an interesting take on that. Yeah.
Tinkerbell represents hope. And so you have kids without any hope, without any parents, without any, you know, they're orphans. They're look back when this was written, she was bringing them into a world of hope where there was no hope. That was her. She was like the farrier of hope, and she brought people back. So it was she. I don't think she be blamed for bringing people to Neverland necessarily. Only that she was bringing them there to give them like another life, another hope.
Did she love? Did she love Peter Pan?
Absolutely. Everything that she was.
We get that from the Disney movie too,
for her own personal thing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
everything I felt like in this movie. She was just doing it for her own gain to be with Peter. Yeah. That was it.
So I mean,
well, I have seen all of the Tinker Bell movies there, Brandon. I have seen all the Tinker Bell movies. I mean, they'll never beat the Island of the Pirate Fairies. I've seen the Pixie That's Games. I have seen them all, and they are fantastic.
So, listen, I need to.
She always loved Peter Pan, and that story was very clear.
Yeah, very much.
I need to come clean and explain that my first on screen crush, and I remember this to today. Was Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell in this movie. And oh my God, she was just the most adorable thing. And I was tiny when I remember really saw this movie and thought about it, but oh my God, she was just adorable. But I do want to talk about, we've kind of circled around it, but we have to talk about Dustin Hoffman. I was just looking up and I'm pissed because I think, and Sean, I know that you're one to say that Academy Awards and nominations aren't really everything, but he wasn't recognized with a nomination. And I think he deserves it. This performance, I think, stands out in an illustrious career for Dustin Hoffman. What do you guys think? I feel like this is pinnacle Dustin Hoffman.
Before anyone answers, to be clear, back then, fully supported the Oscars. Yes. It wasn't until like 2002 that I was like, yeah, this shit's rigged.
So in that case, I think 1998, dude.
So you think this movie's better than Rain Man and The Graduate?
No, I think it's better than The Graduate. I think the performance is better than The Graduate for sure.
Yeah, Rain Man was good. I mean, let's not forget.
I do. I personally do.
Graduate's over a fucking rated movie, dude.
Me and Jeremy watched The Graduate. And it was a little disappointing, but say this: Dustin Hoffman has surrendered some beautiful performances. Kramer versus Kramer was fabulous. I thought he was
great.
Tootsie was good.
Yeah, great in Tootsie. One of the best spot characters he was ever in was in Stranger Than Fiction, where he was the English professor trying to explain to Will Ferrell, trying to figure out what kind of a story he was in.
That's a great one.
Are you not happy? You're not a golem? I mean, he was so straight and so like, just, oh, it was beautiful, beautiful.
It was nice to see him go off the rail on this movie, like just having fun with it. Because like you really never get to see him like just like fucking get owned this fucking movie. And that's worth all the actors, by the way, in this movie. Williams, Hopkins. I mean, they were like, fuck,
Bob Hoskins,
Bob Hoskins.
Let's just go 100% on it. You know what I'm saying?
Rufio.
Yeah, exactly. Rufio. I mean, fuck. Sorry. You know, he's a legend.
You've got your love of Rufio. You titled yourself that today.
Bro, still to this day, he could walk around and he is loved no matter what. I think he's done one movie. He's on the Hall of Fame as Rufio.
So,
The fat kid inside me would just slap me if I failed to mention the food in this movie, because when they were eating and had that food fight, right? I don't know what the fuck was on that table, but it looked like the best table you've ever seen of food. It was like this.
Best spread.
It was like this custardy, like, I don't know what that was, but god dang it, it looked so good.
The whole time.
So do you really think it's food there? Or do you think the kids are just, that's your imagination, and they're starving to death,
man. Those kids, I'm just like, that's great. But it's really sad because they're not fucking eating anything. It's just like, whatever it gets
you. I'm going to disagree.
There's different ways you could take that. There's an adult way to take that, and there's a kid way to take that.
So there were two. Yeah. Well, no. I mean, yeah. There were two scenes in this movie that I think really changed the way the movie could have been, or should have been, perhaps, to make it one way or the other more dramatic, more comedic, right? Mm-hmm. So when the girl is touching Peter Pan's face, it was a girl or
it was a boy?
I can't remember. It was a boy.
No, it was a boy. It was the only boy that was like, it was only when they all left with Rufio, and the little boy stayed there
and just touching, like, touching his face. And he goes, there you are, Peter. And that is the moment that he realized that he bought into the world of imagination. And then there's later in the movie where he realizes that this is a world of imagination and he needs to buy out to save his children. So he has those two moments.
That's a good point.
And I think that the fact that the food is real to the Lost Boys would suggest that once he bought in, the food is real. The world is real. Everything around him is real.
I mean, fucker, the dude flies, in, right? Well,
it doesn't exist. Right. Yeah. But, well.
Well, one of the boys said, "You're playing with us, Peter. You're playing with us." So it makes me think, okay, like.
Are the Lost Boys real? Are the
boys aware? I mean. Exactly. Yeah. It makes me. Or do the boys, or the Lost Boys, are they playing this imaginary game too? Just to so.
And this is what fucks up.
Is it all in his mind? Because you know, in the end of the movie, he wakes up on the fucking ground,
and he sees
Smee. This is the problem with the movie. And if you go back to Jamberry's book, Captain Hook is played by the father. Okay, he is the father of Mary and
Wendy.
Moira, Angela, Darley, whatever
Michael, and John.
The father is actually Captain Hook. So they are leaving the foundations of reality, entering imagination, and coming back. Mm-hmm. Here we have a problem because Toodles comes back. Toodles is part of reality. So that means that the Lost Boys, in some way, have to be real.
So. Yeah,
I mean, right?
Well, we got to talk about this ending. Yeah.
Am I wrong? No, it's kind of fucked up.
Same with Wendy.
Yeah, so we got to talk about the ending because the ending has bothered me since I was a kid. And watching it again and, you know, kind of picking it apart again, it really bothers me that Smee is shown at the end. Now, I get that they have kind of a backdoor reason of why, right? Because he takes the gold and he kind of basically bails when Hook goes crazy at the end. So we can say, okay, well, maybe he did escape Neverland and go to the real world. And so he's living in the real world. But this is kind of what my frustration is, right? This idea of it doesn't really know. It's kind of going through an identity crisis of what type of movie it wants to be. Are we supposed to sit there at the end and go like, ooh, we've been mind blown because this is all in his head. It's a big dream, right? Which I think that there's so much that points to the fact that it's not a dream, that he actually went to Neverland. But the fact that he sees Smee there, and what do you guys think of the ending with him seeing Smee or this guy who resembles Smee?
I'm gonna be controversial and short.
Okay.
I don't think it matters. Oh, I think you have an enjoyable movie. No, you have an enjoyable movie that shows the evolution of a character beautifully, the reconnection of children with their father, and at some point you gotta go, you know what? It was a good movie.
All right, guys. Well, with that, thank you guys. That means a lot.
I think by Peter Pan, Robin Williams, when he defeated Hook, it actually stop Neverland. All of a sudden, everyone woke up. Hook was the villain. There is no more villain anymore for
you're going off Lost script Boys. Now.
They all. I'm just thinking that everything goes back to everyone.
Neverland just
pretty much becomes
from a dream.
Wakes up. I don't like that. That's no.
Let's say that without Peter and Hook, there is no shared Neverland, which we've agreed is imagination. So if they're out, maybe they're out all out. So maybe for 50 years, they've all been out of Neverland. And then when Peter comes back, Neverland is almost reborn. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
We got Toodles, though, flying around at the end, which
We got problems. I'm not going to lie. We got problems. But it's also imagination and fun. So we're okay with it.
Yeah. See, this is the movie here. This is for me here. There's a constant battle between what you experience as a child watching this movie and as a grown up, and you're just watching this as an adult, and you're like, what the fuck? There is two different movies. You're like, what the fuck? What happened here? What's going on here? I mean, that's the one fault of this podcast is that it's done to some of my movies that I really fucking enjoyed that now I'm just like, oh shit, did I see this totally different?
Yeah.
Was I fucking naive when I was little?
It's like when Amy Farrah Fowler tells Sheldon Cooper that Indiana Jones has no bearing on the first movie, and then you actually like sit down and go, oh fuck, he really did too.
God damn it. But I do like this. I mean, you guys make a lot of point, you know? I mean, it's like there's the whole battle between Pan versus Hook, right? But there's also kind of like the whole theme, which you're talking about, where it's like the adult battling their children, you know, the constant fight between, you know, the adults and the children. And you do have that kind of overall theme in the movie.
Yeah, it's that question of how do you be a good parent? And if you're a parent, you know that it's a constant battle each and every day to try to be better than the version that you were yesterday. And most times you end up failing miserably. And I feel like in a lot of ways, it's not just the frustration of the kids that gets across, but it's a frustration of just parenting in general. Now that's not to defend,
not a parent, obviously.
Right. That's not to defend what Peter does at the beginning of the movie. So, but at the same time, I think that it's an interesting.
Let's take a moment. And was he a shit dad? No, he was doing everything. Hold on. In Peter's mind,
he's going to lose a million dollar job situation, dude. That's a lot.
In Peter's mind, he is doing everything he can for his family. He is going to work. He's working 90-hour work weeks. He gets in a fight with his wife over it. He is doing everything he can to make this family work. What he doesn't realize is that by doing that, he's also destroying the thing he's trying to protect, which is a lot of parents run into that problem.
That's it.
I'm not saying he's a shitty parent. I'm saying that all parents are doing the best they can.
Right.
And once you realize as a parent, now I'm not a parent, so please take this as a grain of salt. As soon as parents realize that there is a balance and that children are emotional because they are going through emotions 1,000 times a day and they're going from 0 to 1,000, 0 to 1,000, 0 to 1,000. And because they're learning how to control their emotions. And as soon as you realize that and you don't take it personal, this is the child development. I think that you've run into two fundamental things. Number one is that you have to have work-life balance. The second thing is patience. Without learning how to be an adult and learning how to grow into patience, you'll never be a good old person, period, end of story. So with those two things, I think you can learn to be a good parent. So go ahead, Ed. Tell me how I'm totally wrong.
I'm on your side, Sean.
No, obviously the way you set this up is obviously very one-sided, Sean. So we're it's very obvious that what you think is how you think. Okay, yeah. So what I was saying is, like in the very beginning of the movie, there's two different types of parents. It's just how it is, and that's okay. That's okay in life. You have a choice to be the parent. You could be the coach, or you could be the parent that says, "Oh, I'll be at the game." That's what it is. And overall, Robin Williams, he chose one side, and that's fine. Like, he wanted to do that. He provided for his children very well. Now, he also, those consequences with both choices, right? You can be the coach and you have maybe a shitty job, whatever, but you know, you're there for your kids. And then there's the other side that you can, be the parent that brings home the bacon. But then you're going to miss your kid growing up. So if you could find that very thin road, that if you can get a little bit of both, that's great. But see, Robin Williams in the very beginning, he was all on one side of the road. He wasn't on the other side at all. Like, he was not the best parent in the very beginning of the movie. He lost himself and he needed to find that connection himself and first before he could even be a parent. Like, he needed he spent so much time with work. He lost his wife. He lost his kids. He was losing everyone that he loved without even knowing it because he was just focusing on the sale and finishing up. So I was just thinking, there's a very thin line, but overall, you do have a choice.
I'm agreeing with you. In the end, Peter became everything he ever hated as an adult, you know, where he just kind of just lost of just everything that, you know, he used to stand for. And you see that. I love the scene where you have the wife support Peter to come back to reality, you know? And I love that scene where it's just like, listen, you're going to only have so many years at this moment where you're going to be able to be with that kid, to have those moments, to have these crazy fucking days. Because after that, it's gone. It was almost like full circle, like, you know, I'm going to end up just like in Neverland, where I'm just going to lose everything to the innocence of what I thought it was, you know, from me as watching this whole fucking film. You know what I'm saying?
It's like that quote from Andy Bernard in The Office. I wish somebody would tell me we're in the good old days before the good old days are over.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of the same concept.
It's that realization. Yeah.
Yeah. And Michael Keaton, I think he said a quote recently that he was saying that, like, and he was talking to another actor,
Bill Hader,
about, yes, and you remember that quote, of like, you know what? I don't need to pick this movie. I don't need to have this movie, right? I don't need to work right now. I'd rather be in the moment of my children's life. And I'll find work here and there, but I don't want to miss these moments. I'll work after this. I'll do something. There's moments here that the kid that you only have children for so long, and then you realize once they're out, there's one last time you're going to carry them, and you're never going to carry them again. And you realize you lost it, and you can't have that back. And it's something that, I mean, it plays very emotional today, this day of age of my household. So it's very emotional with, like, if I come home, I sometimes have that Robin Williams, hey, I'm doing good, I'm doing work. And then I realize I'm not in the moment with my kids, and they're just wanting to play with me. And I need to step outside. I feel like Robin Williams' character is Peter Pan and Hook. And he can decide where he's going to be. Is he going to play imagination with his boys, or is he going to be the bad guy and just
Jeremy,
have to, you know,
yeah, Jeremy said it perfectly. He became what he hated. Or Jeremy, but right, he became Hook. Yeah. He became Peter Pan. He was this conflicted person. And I think that if you look at most people, right, we're all going through existential crises at some level, right? We don't know who it is that we actually want to be. Do we want to be the fun, loving, cool person, or do we want to be the serious professional? And I think that's a really, there's no answer, right? There's a personal direction, but there's no answer. And I really, really appreciate that, that this movie tackles, like, and I think this is actually a fault of the movie, like I said earlier, but it tackles these really deep, serious, philosophical, personal, psychological questions in the wrapping paper of a fun family movie. You know,
kids movie.
Yeah.
You know, Brandon's so funny. Like, when I was watching this movie, I was like, you know, I come to the realization that I might be a fucking pirate lawyer. No, like, I don't fucking find it funny going crazy and shit like that. So I'm like, fuck, I used to think that the kids were cool, but they're not fucking cool.
Yeah.
I'm fucking growing up. I'm an adult now. Holy shit. I fucking lost it, man. Where's my youth?
Yeah. Well, and it's nice, Eddie said something about finding that balance and realizing that balance. It's nice to find it when it's before it's too late. But I also think you're a little harsh saying that the father figure, Peter, is, you know, has chosen himself of being selfish. He's not working for himself. He's working for his family. And that's something that I've always had a hard time, you know, coming from the family that I come from, is my dad got home at 7 o'clock at night. He kissed all three kids goodnight and went and have his dinner. And he, you know, you didn't see him wake up in the morning. He was gone before you woke up, and barely saw him during the week. And then on the weekends, you know, he engaged tremendously. And then there came a point where he was able to separate his financial life, his business life from his personal life. And he never missed a game. And that's magnificent. Yeah. But that took a serious sacrifice on his part in order to achieve. It wasn't like he was making a selfish choice. It was that he was sacrificing early to have the spoils later. And I think that's something that you do have to respect a little bit of in that type of character.
So when he was on the trip, when he goes on trips with you, I always love your dad. He was on the trip with you. Like, he would take you to a trip. There was no answering the phone.
I mean,
in front of you.
Very,
like,
very rarely. It was, and he does this way better than I do, by the way. I'm learning how to separate that shit out. But when he detaches from work, he is detached from work.
I mean, like, we had, like, good role models for our fathers. I mean, I don't know. We can all say that we had, like, you know, a good, like, a compass guide, you know, like, fuck, you know, you're working 40 hours a week and 50 hours a week, and yet you're fucking doing our ball games at the same time, you know? It's just so much. You don't see that moment. I think it's just one of those moments for him in this movie where you're just like, man, I just botched a $1 million fucking deal. It's just like, sometimes, like, you know, life just fucking throws you a curveball at the worst time. And sometimes you just need that support. Sometimes you just need to take a back and just, like, focus on, like, what really matters the most.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, just a little, my dad would come to high school games, right, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, watch the game, and then he'd go back to work and work till 10, work till 11. That was his sacrifice. He would just go and do it and never asked anybody, never said anything. And that's the balance. That's the balance I'm talking about. It was so beautiful to see Ron Williams' character kind of realized that balance, that he was losing his kids. He was losing his wife.
Yeah. So to take it, I think this is, hashtag thanks dads. Absolutely. I want to talk about the technical achievements of this movie. And I mean, we've talked about this when we did Jurassic Park. We said that basically, you know, Spielberg had a way of really creating a feeling and a visual that wasn't expected for a 1991 movie. I thought that the CGI, the effects were fantastic. I don't know. What do you guys think? Just on a technical level. Okay, Jerry, you didn't like it so much. It aged poorly.
No, not that, because like, you know, we talk about the same year when a movie comes out. I mean, Terminator 2 came out the same year, and those fucking CGI, just graphics and visuals is fucking just phenomenal. And you can see some of it where it's just like, oh man, it kind of felt fucking a little age and dated and shit like that. E.T. looked fucking more realistic than this movie here.
I agree with you, Jared, but in all fairness, I don't think you can go one-to-one, because what Terminator 2 was doing was revolutionizing the industry. It hadn't yet permeated the industry, right? Yeah. So if it was 5 years after Terminator 2 and it looked like this shit, I'd be like, ooh, that's terrible. But the fact that it was kind of on par with the rest of it, I thought the special effects were okay.
Don't you think E.T. did it way better with their visual effects and shit?
I think that we're spoiled with E.T. with DVD and Blu-ray releases that have cleaned up and fixed a lot of the problems with E.T.
Oh, come on.
I think this movie aged pretty well. I looked at it, like, I didn't find any major issues with, like, most of it, I love the costumes. I love the ships. I love, like, you have this idea of, like, it's almost a musical, but everyone's cheering. I thought it was really great with the Lost Boys area. And you got this very small area, even all the way down to the mermaids. Like, it was kind of a cool little. Listen.
It
was cool, in my opinion, as a 1991 movie. Like, I think it hits pretty good.
He's flying over the clouds. I can definitely say, okay, that looks bad. But there's some scenes. I mean, the scene that the classic, like, Amblin, you know, you got the sun setting there, and you got Peter flying, you know, in the silhouette of it. I just look at that and I go, like, that's pretty damn impressive. I mean, I think it has aged well, considering the fact that we're looking at a 1991 movie.
No, and the fact that it's Neverland. The fact that it's an imaginary place, which is easy to swallow. And I'm telling you, this movie becomes a whole lot easier to swallow when you talk about John Williams' score. Yes. Because I think this is one of the hit out of the park John Williams, unrecognized for his brilliance. This shit has so many themes in there. It's so beautiful.
Didn't you catch a precursor to Harry Potter here? I did. I heard
it had a little
notes
of
Harry Potter.
It had a lot, and it's like he threw the book at it, and it was. I heard a little Star Wars. I heard a little Indiana Jones. I heard a little. What movie he did? Fuck.
We did E.T. And it kind of had
Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks.
Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can. Oh, it had kind of that kind of like overpowering, jazz feel to it in some scenes where I thought it was brilliant. It was brilliant, brilliant.
There's definitely, now looking at this movie, there's, when I have to like show it to my kids, they enjoyed it, but there was like these cringeworthy moments. And like, you know, when you saw the ladies when their hook first came in town, and it's like explaining just little moments. So we just don't explain it. We just move right past it. And then, but they enjoyed it. I mean, the baseball game, and they thought it was funny. And then the hook, he was a villain. Like, he's actually one of the scariest villains when I was at my time, when I was a child. And I can see it still holds up for my kids. Like, they were afraid of him at first. And then they loved how Peter Pan saved the day. And it grabbed the attention of my kids today, which I thought that was pretty impressive. So with all that stuff that's out there right now.
One last little thing that I wanted to kind of throw out there was, I loved when you saw a deconstructed Hook. His wig was gone. You saw an old man trying to hold on to something that was moving beyond him. And I thought that was a very beautiful back and forth before he got eaten by the crocodile.
The crocodile
dead?
Yeah. I mean,
hell, this is another problem that I have with this movie. What the fuck happened to Hook? Did he jump into the crocodile's mouth?
No,
it doesn't close his mouth.
How did he lose his hand?
How does a crocodile come back to life?
Because I'll tell you how, because Peter Pan made it so. Because Peter Pan is the king of this domain, and he wanted it to go back, and boom, he came back. How the fuck is Peter Pan fly? So, come on!
I think Sean's stuck in a fucking Neverland.
He's got one answer for everything.
I read somewhere where that Captain Hook's like, he's trying to revenge over Peter Pan because Peter Pan fed his arm to the crocodile.
I would have liked to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. I mean, that's the instigating action. That's the mythology. The exciting action for it. Yes.
And that brings us to the NR review. Now it's time on the podcast where each of the hosts provides a score on the following scale. Eddie, Rufio, can you provide the scale?
Rufio.
Zero, the perfect movie. You don't need shit to enjoy it. One, a feel good first cocktail. Two, a happy buzz. Three, you're gonna Uber lifting home. Four, rough morning walk of shame. Five, blackout, shit face, spring break drunk. Gentlemen, let's start with Brandon.
This is a movie that is a true classic. It has, I think, aged very, very well. It is, like Maggie Smith, as we were saying earlier, it's a fine wine. It has aged well. There are, though, to me, some glaring problems with this movie. And to be real honest, I can look past a lot of these problems because it is a movie that I remember watching in theaters as a kid. It's a movie that I remember watching countless times on VHS and then on DVD. And it's a movie that I haven't seen in a pretty long time, but sitting down and watching it with my kids and watching them get excited in the same parts that I was excited, it makes me say, ooh, you know what? This is a fun movie. And a lot of my problems maybe aren't as big a problems as I think they are. But if we're talking about this movie in the context of this podcast, which we are, then this movie is not very great. Okay. We're talking about great filmmakers here, but we're not talking about a great product. And the problem is that it could be a phenomenal product if it chose a side, right? If it said, I want to commit this to a family film, then it could have been a fantastic, phenomenal film. If it said, I want to commit this to a PG-13 serious analysis or examination, this could have been, I think, a transcendent movie in a lot of ways. The problem is it flips back and forth. One day, one second, we have a kid who's turning into a human bowling ball that is kind of silly. And then you have this really serious, heartfelt moment. And it feels a little bit like Whiplash. And it felt a little bit like Whiplash. Because of that, I'm just going to get straight to it.
Whiplash the movie
Whiplash was fantastic.
The phenomenon.
I was going to say Whiplash, like the phenomenon, not Whiplash. Why would it be Whiplash the movie? We're not drumming. No drum solos. Anyway, Jesus Christ. So I think that this movie is God damn it, Ed. I wish I wasn't first. I'm going to go with it's a 2.25 for me.
Don't forget about the Lost Boys.
Don't forget about the Lost Boys. 2.25. Okay. I think it is not. I think that I'm being nice. I'm being generous, and that's because of a nostalgia. I think that it probably sits somewhere closer in the threes or towards three, but I'm going to give it a 2.25 just because I think that it's a movie that has so much going on. It just has too much going on. And because of that, Ed, I'm going to you, fucker.
Oh, you know what? Some of these names I was looking at for the characters, Thud Butt, Too Small, Don't Ask, Latch Boy, Rufio, Pockets, like they're just on point with some of these cool nicknames as a kid.
It was the 90s.
This movie, it was the 90s. And this movie holds up to being still, it's like that, it's that weird movie that you can watch with your kids and get away with little things that they just don't understand. And you understand it when you're an adult. It's like almost like those, it's the Family Guy Simpsons style, right? Of like something that probably nowadays doesn't get away with it, but it's a classic movie that I enjoyed watching. I was really happy to watch this. I just realized that, I mean, I think there's some important lessons and takeaways from this movie. Rediscovering yourself is very important. And that's something that Robin Williams had to do in this movie, as well as his kids to, like, you know what, they had to have faith in their dad that he was going to find them back. I think there's, you know, it's never too late to find yourself again. And I think something like this, Peter Pan was able to find himself again. Captain Hook was not able to find himself again. And that's the difference of a lot. I mean, that's just like, there's all these little lessons in this movie. And I think it's cool to have a movie like that. And it's cool to watch a family movie. Is it the best movie? No, there's major plot holes. Like we were talking about, everyone was saying, but I, I'm stuck at a score at this point of a movie that I don't know what to give it really. It's not fucking better than some of the movies we've done though. So, but it's better than some of the shittier movies that we've done, like the fucking Ring that you had.
What was the joke?
Oh God, ow, my cheek hurts from that backhand you just gave me.
Brandon, I like your scores, but I'm gonna give this a little bit better than you. A 2.20.
Oh good.
I'm giving this a 2.20. What?
Jeremy, I regret
for those of you listening at home, Jeremiah has rolled his eyes so hard, Neverland crashed and burned into the ocean.
Well, the funny thing is
old lawyer over there, Jeremiah. That's not you, Sean.
2.20?
Oh, me?
So 2.2, right, Ed? 2.2? Yeah, well, 2.2, Jeremy, I just want you to know that I as soon as I said 2.25, I regretted and said I should have gone 2.26, but I'm not changing it. I'm not changing it. We're going to go 2.25, and Rufio down there gave us 2.20.
So, yeah, all going, guys. I'm not going to lie. I was a little sad with this one, guys, because it's not the same movie that I remember, you know, because it had those moments of magic in the movie that I enjoyed. But watching it now, I feel like sometimes it didn't hold up. Like between the first act all the way to the final act, between the middle of that, it just didn't hold up for me, a lot of it. And it just, for me, it didn't feel like a Spielberg movie. And I mean that in a very nice way. You know, it just felt like when you watch a Spielberg movie, you feel confident knowing what's going to happen. And it's just so weird that it's very a few movies that he's done in his career that you just don't have that feeling, man. I get the message, that the tone, like don't lose the inner child in us, but you know, it's a little hitting over the head what I felt like in this movie. But you watch this movie because of the actors, and you see Robert Williams and you see Dustin Hoffman and Bob Hopkins and even Julia Roberts just getting lost in the characters. And that is the best part of this film, guys. And I still think this is the best adaptation of Peter Pan that you will see. And there's so many of them out there. For this film, you just need to feed it with a long imaginary spoon. So it is not the greatest movie.
Wait, was it Star Wars? What? I mean, come on. That's a little bit different, but I'm just saying, imagination is movies.
Every time there's always something about that, you're like, oh, what about Star Wars? You're not going to bait me on that shit, bro. You're not going to bait me on that shit.
You bait me right now. Watching this movie is a little like Star Wars. Overall, you just got to be a fan. You just got to, sometimes it hurts you and it stabs you in the back, but you just got to persevere.
You're a kid when it comes to Star Wars, but when it comes to Hook, you're not a kid anymore. See, okay, that makes sense.
Look at this guy. See, that's your
chair. I get this. Jeremiah, I get the same feeling with the ring, but
just like, Jesus Christ, dude. Thank you. So with that, man, for me, it's a 2.75, man. It's not the greatest fucking film.
Oh, you're really going to be pissed at him? I'm shocked right now, Jer. Oh,
I'm saying it's a great score. I thought he was going to go four.
I thought we were going four.
It's a great score.
No, I wasn't going four. Eddie's just like, oh, what about Star Wars?
I'm right there with you.
And I mean this in a very nice way. Star Wars is a better fucking film. It changed everything. Hook didn't change anything. So that's my fucking point of view, and that's my fucking take on that. Sean,
I agree with Jeremiah. I don't think Hook was a revolutionary film in many ways. I do think that Hook was a fantastic film. I think it entertained the shit out of me when I was a kid, and as I totter off into middle age, it enraptures me still, in the words of Peter O'Toole. This movie, I was shocked at how great Robin Williams was, which we didn't even talk about.
Yeah.
The performance was just, you know, Robin Williams is a little bit like, for me at least, like Steve Martin, a little bit like the guy, Jim Carrey, where they have a tendency to go over the top. They have to carry it too far. Mm-hmm. And he didn't in this movie. Dustin Hoffman was fucking phenomenal. Bob Hoskins was great. I'll even give it up to Glenn Close, who went into the boot box with very little protest.
My God, that was Glenn Close.
Holy shit. But I do agree there are some plot holes. I do agree that there are some questions. But it's hard for me to say that this is the greatest ever adaptation of Peter Pan and not a good movie. This movie has been tried to replicate over and over and over again. They did it with Johnny Depp was fighting Neverland. That movie was magnificent. If you haven't seen that movie, go watch it. It's one of the greatest movies of all time. Anyway, they tried to do it with the guy Wolverine. What's his name? Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
It was trash.
Pan or
something like that. It was trash because they are missing what makes this movie unique and great, which is that dichotomy between innocence and experience, between age and holding on to youth and understanding children and understanding adults. And so I'm going to give this movie I was really leaning on giving this movie a one. You guys have talked me up slightly. I think it's not a one. Okay. It's a two. It probably is more significant than a two, but God dang it, I cannot for the life of me give it above a two because every time I watch it, I enjoy the shit out of it.
I think it's
and so for me, this movie is an honest two. With that, what do we got there when we take those scores and divide by four?
It's a 2.3.
And Jeremiah, where does that land us on the list of movies?
Solid 2.3.
It ties with one of Brandon's favorite movies on number 36, Hocus Pocus 2.3.
There's no way. There's no way. God damn it. Sean, change it. Go for a one. Go for a one.
Is that 2.75?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a one if that's
you
shit.
You can't do that.
Oh, no. Please. We're still in the same episode. Hocus Pocus. You cannot tell me this is Hocus Pocus.
Look what you guys did with Hocus Pocus.
Jeremiah, what is better than Hook?
Okay, give me a couple movies. Better than Hook is Birdcage. All right. Tombstone. John Wick 2. Quiet Place.
Fessy.
No. Goonies. Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Ah, Goonies!
Goonies and Breakfast
is better.
I'm going to say
Goonies
is better.
Jeremy and I agree. Goonies is better.
And what's worse? Well, what's worse than Hook? What's worse than Hook?
The Batman 2022, John Wick, Die Hard, Home Alone 2, Harry Potter, Sorcerer's Stone, North by Northwest. Greatest.
All right, it's where it should be.
It should be higher.
Wait. I lost my marbles. Wait, which what? The Batman is worse. And
Batman is just like a slight hair worse.
Well, you said some good movies down there.
All right. Well, on this controversial podcast, if you enjoyed our review or a fan of the podcast, we ask you please subscribe wherever you're listening. We are on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at the Dot Gentleman Podcast. The dot means a lot. You can visit our website, thegentlemanpodcast.com. Or if you want to reach out, you can do so by email at hosts@thegentlemanpodcast.com. Jeremy, we are celebrating something we have to absolutely recognize the fans for.
Thank you.
As of today, we have how many listeners did we reach? We reached a milestone in our podcast.
Well, in 1 month, we reached over 1,500. So that's pretty fucking cool, man.
That's a thank you to all you listeners.
Everyone that
1,500 million?
Share us in your guys'
don't
lives.
Don't ruin this for us, okay? God damn it.
Special for us. Just so you know, for the vast majority of podcasts, they don't get numbers like that. That is not to say we're better than anyone else. It's just to say that we are very, very honored to have so many people enjoying our show and really would love you to continue and share us and allow us to grow because we surely enjoy having these intellectual conversations about movies for our private collections. And with that, cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. So who was
today?
I was the half.
No,
but you're the half for like not like an Empire Strikes Back, but no. You know, I'll be the half today.
Jeremiah, I thought you were going to go four. I thought for sure that you were just going to rip up on a new one.
No,
I thought we were going to Armageddon.
That's what I thought. And then you gave it 2.75.
No, nothing comes close to Armageddon. I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. At least there was
just wait till we do Pearl Harbor.
Oh, we're doing Pearl Harbor.